Welcome to Unapologetic. We're going to put out a statement, and I want you guys to raise your hands if you agree with the statement. Statement number one, women do not deserve rights. Raise your hand if you agree. Taylor?
Cam?
I don't see your hands raised. All right, just making sure we're all on the same page here. Let's get into the show. Young Apollo with the brother. Unapologetic Live, guys. I couldn't think of an intro, and once we get into the video that we're going to be reacting to, which is Jubilee, you'll understand why I came up with that intro. Today, Jubilee put out an episode titled, Is Gen Z Misinformed? Conservative Teens versus Liberals versus Moderates. Actually, it wasn't today, it was yesterday. But we're going to get into these. You know we love to react to the Jubilee Middle Ground videos and give you our stances on the different statements that they put out. For those of you who do not know the ground rules, Jubilee is going to present a statement. If you agree with the statement, you walk forward and sit in the circle. If you do not, you stand back and wait. The people who walked forward and agreed are going to have a conversation. Then the people who disagree are going to come forward and join that conversation. Let's get into it. This is Gen Z conservative teens versus liberal versus moderate.
Humans, welcome to Middle Ground. Keep an eye out for an interactive prompt in the middle of this episode. Thank you for watching.
Interactive. Our generation is misinformed. Are you guys walking forward for this one? And by our generation, we mean Gen Z. So you're going to look at this from the Gen Z perspective. Upon hearing it, I don't feel like walking forward on this. I think as far as misinformed goes, I don't think you can label an entire generation misinformed. I think Gen Z is more linked into information than any generation before it. So if they're misinformed, we're really all misinformed. So I guess you can put that blanket statement over everybody, but it's got to be over everybody.
Yeah, I'm almost like ready to skip past this part into like the actual conversation, because whether right. I say they're misinformed or informed is like...
Doesn't really matter.
It's kind of lanyap. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say probably the same. I think that you can't really make a generalization, so... Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So we're not walking
forward. We're all right down the middle.
We are right down the middle. We're moderates. There you go.
I do feel our generation is heavily misinformed sometimes because of social media. A lot of the times they just see movements as sort of a trend without looking into them. And I feel that that happened so much, they'll just go with it. And I feel like a lot of the times it makes it very easy for us to kind of just be tailed by the government. And I feel that we need to do a lot better job at looking into things and really reading into things and starting to take facts over feelings.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Ben Shapiro.
Just look at something and accept it as truth, than to go and do your research and find counterclaims.
Looks like we need to boost the volume for the audience. People are saying
yeah,
in
for
the chat.
There we go.
Aligns with that, because if you're just sitting there like scrolling through TikTok and somebody says that this is happening, I mean, like, who's gonna? It's not really
educate yourself.
Yeah.
I strongly agree with both of you guys. You know, I think the reason why I was hesitant about walking over is. Even though I agree that our generation is misinformed, that doesn't mean that older generations aren't also misinformed, especially, you know, in the form of, for like Gen X and the baby boomers or whatever, cable news in particular. You have millions of Americans now who are tuning in every night to see Tucker Carlson spread misinformation. I don't want to pick on him in particular, but he's an example. Social media is just another example of what's been going on for generations and generations of people just, with all due respect, being too lazy to do their own research. And just
yeah, pause. I think we're in probably one of the most informed generations of our times just by virtue of being so connected through the internet and being just having this global connectivity to things that are happening in places far separated from where we are today. Like, I can wake up and hear about protests that young women are engaging in Iran, which is something that was never happening before unless you went and read the newspaper for the day and they were doing a report on foreign affairs. So that's a little different. And in that way, we are far more informed than we were in the past. But with that comes a susceptibility to false information, and that susceptibility is probably higher than ever because everybody has a voice now on the internet and everybody has a voice on social media and is able to give their opinion or their firsthand account. Now, is that the same as what he says, like baby boomers are getting from mainstream media? In a way, yeah. mainstream media is pretty much towing the line of whatever agenda is supported by said network. So
yeah, I think that as concerning as false information is controlled information. And I think that's mm-hmm. across the generations a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem when you have a centralized media apparatus that's curating what they want people to see. But the same could be said of our time is like, you know, we're all worried about false information proliferating, but is there an equal level of concern about curated, controlled information? And big tech is just as capable of that in our generation as a media apparatus was in prior generations when it was all centralized under a few cable network channels or whatever.
Right.
So we're just as susceptible to propaganda, which is like, which side do we want to err on? Do we want to err on people who may be propagating false information, having the freedom to do so, or what do we want to err on? Too much control over information from a centralized authority.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the debate we're seeing right now in the Twitter Elon Musk the mm-hmm. battlefield. And the Elon Musks and the free speech absolutists of the world would say, hey, I'd rather bet on smart or people to investigate facts for themselves and have the ability to do so
right.
than entities that are in the abstract controlling information and saying who's allowed to see what information. It's like, no, I'm going to go ahead and let myself parse through all this and come to my own conclusions, then control what you're even able to ask about, what you're even able to see.
Right. It's exactly what's happening now. It's just like, it's so different than what we got with mainstream media. And yeah, that's exactly what's happening with Twitter. They're so scared of everybody being able to have a voice in the conversation that they're going to pin it on, oh, false information and misinformation. That's what we're scared of. But really, they're scared of not being able to control the narrative anymore, in my opinion.
Just believing what other people tell them.
Yeah, so I completely agree with you guys. But I also wanted to add that as a generation, we don't have good examples of politicians and how they disagree and agree.
She's
anymore.
Right.
When my parents were younger, they used to watch the politicians in the Senate and the House have like great lively debates and come to a conclusion in the end. And you would see how they were speaking and how they bounced off each other's opinions. And now that we don't have that example anymore, we're forced to get our information from social media, and a lot of the news channels these days are heavily biased. And because of that, I feel like as a generation, we're heavily misinformed. My dad.
Ooh, she's so right. And she's on the moderate side, as it says here, Sanvia, or Sanvi. Clearly, that's true. I mean, political discourse is just wrought with disarray and just disgusting rhetoric. I know you guys watched the presidential debates between Trump and Hillary and then Trump and Biden, and they were just horrendous, horrendous. And to think that people in other countries might have tuned into that and watched those debates happening and thought that's a representation of American politics, which it is in today's day and time, but to even know that people are watching that and truly seeing what we're dealing with here is just makes my blood boil a little bit.
Yeah, it's not so a great sad. Reflection of the state so of American politics or just the state of how we handle public discourse. But
right.
that is kind of where we are, which is sad. And so I guess, you know, kudos to this girl for even pointing that out.
Right. I was watching. So I would watch those presidential debates, and these are grown ass people. We're talking in their 80s now, 70s and 80s, discussing political issues with each other. And then I was watching 15-year-old Gen Z people being invited on shows like Jubilee and having just normal back and forth and normal discourse. You have 15, 16, 17-year-olds having better conversations than our politicians are having on debate stages, which is
wild.
Terrifying.
Cam, I think the camera's still on me.
No worries. And it's no wonder that young people are growing up now and they're feeling so over both political parties. They're feeling over the entire system of politics that we're living in right now because they're engaging in better, really more good faith conversations than adults are engaging in.
Yeah, or at least there's an appetite for that.
Yeah.
I think that we criticize Gen Z as like not caring about anything, kind of having right. this nihilistic attitude. But I think a lot of that comes from like, look what we're handing them. Look at the options that we're giving. Look what we've modeled mm-hmm. for them. It's like, yeah, this is politics. This is what we want you to get excited about and engage in. It's like, I don't want that. I don't, you know, y'all do whatever you want. I'm just going to focus on my life and do my thing because that is not cool.
Exactly. And let's continue.
And I spoke to each other a lot about politics. And since I was a liberal at that time and he was a conservative, we would have a lot of debates. I would find myself growing and becoming more moderate just because the things he said and the things I listened to and the things I researched because of points that he made to me, I would find myself transitioning into more of a moderate.
Disagree or stepping forward.
Karen Bass came up hard.
Ooh, there's
a single mom
ad.
Not the Karen Bass ad. Let's skip it and move on.
I disagreed because in 2022, truth is becoming less and less objective and more subjective. And there will always be objective truth, but humanity will stray further and further from that, especially when a lie can be attached to an emotion. You see, we are thinking less and less critically and more emotionally as a whole. And so when you see something like, for instance, George Floyd, May of 2020, that just strikes your heart. First thing you want to do, go to Instagram and post a black square. Now, what is that doing? I don't quite know. But what it made you feel was like you did something to help that poor fellow who got a terrible thing that happened to him.
When I was here,
it sounded like he agreed with the prompt by the answer that he just gave. He said, our generation is overcome with emotions and we see things like George Floyd and we immediately go and post a black square. And the prompt is our generation is misinformed. So it seems like he agrees with that to me. I would love to hear a little bit more of his answer.
Yeah.
That didn't feel right exactly.
Yeah. You always get you get more insight from listening to the actual conversation than people's answers. But it's interesting to see like how people interpreted the initial prompt and where they land. But the meat is definitely in when they actually speak. So.
Right.
During this question, I was thinking like, is the majority of like my generation, aka the people I know, misinformed? And I would definitely say yeah. I feel like the lack of information is like almost as bad as like receiving the wrong information.
I want to touch up on something you said. I think it is true that social media did change the way we receive.
I remember him from another video.
Nathan.
Misinformation or the truth. But that doesn't make us misinformed because of that. Obviously, like, yes, you have social media. It's so much easier to get information. But I don't think because we have social media, that automatically makes you misinformed.
Sure. Ooh, it's so intense. Ooh. Okay, next prompt. My parents influenced my political beliefs. I'm sure as hell walking forward. You guys know that. grew up with a single mom, radical leftist. So I was a radical leftist for quite a bit of time there. So certainly I'm walking forward.
But see, you've since come to your own sort of view. So could you also say that, no, they didn't, because the views I have now are independent of that influence?
I would say their influence was paramount to me being in the position that I'm in today. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think my parents weren't overtly political in our household. I don't think we ever talked about politics, but they were like very Christian. We had Bible time and stuff. And so I guess that lends itself more to a conservative disposition. Sure. And now when I talk to my dad and mom about politics, it's definitely like, conservative leaning. But it wasn't like they were like, vote Republican the rest of your life, or, you know, you're a bad person or anything like that.
Right.
So, but I think it's almost impossible for anyone to say that, no, my parents had no influence on my political beliefs.
Cam?
Yeah, actually, I think that I influenced my parents' political views.
There you go.
Nice.
Chestnut checkers.
Okay.
I'm going to ask that in the chat, by the way, so you guys can answer whether your parents influenced yours.
Yeah, we won't get into too much of their stories here. We'll hear a few of them and then we'll skip to the next prompt. Not really much to debate about here.
I grew up in a conservative Christian household in Iowa, so I'm very, very well around like conservative politics all the time. And my parents have absolutely influenced like not only my morals, but my political beliefs through that manner. And I think a lot of those teachings actually led me to being more progressive and more liberal over time rather than actually being conservative.
Yeah, for me, conservative it's kind of to similar. Liberal. My dad is Christian, but in Vietnam, they have this thing where actually like they practice both Buddhism and Christianity. From both religions, both Buddhism and Christianity, it's always taught about like we as a community need to take care of each other, we need to respect each other, and we need to create like the best society we can. My parents not like directly telling me like, oh, you should believe this or you should believe that, but just the way that they have taught morals to me and also their own personal experiences have influenced my own beliefs.
Of course.
It's basically what
let's bring the disagreeers
forward. He embraces free market economics just like I do. We need less government spending. We need to cut taxes. We need to cut government spending. And Donald Trump would definitely do that.
Are your parents conservative?
They are, actually, but politics never came up in my family before Trump became president. So they did not influence me to be a conservative.
But there were 2 years in between, you know, Trump being inaugurated in 2017, and then if it was like late or mid-2018, about a year and a half of Trump being in office, running headlines, a lot of big things happening. Are you sure none of that and their commentary at the dinner table maybe didn't influence?
No, I remember 2016 election. They didn't say a thing about who they wanted.
That's hard.
I know, I'm telling you. It just didn't come up. And obviously, this country's way more political now than it was 10 years ago. But I'm telling you, I just became a conservative based off my own research.
Our whole entire family is
very much on the left, like Democratic.
That's interesting to be a parent that just does not bring up politics whatsoever. And I've thought about that and whether or not to bring it up with children. And I don't think it's really necessary. I think it's I would more so like my children to lead their lives as they are going to. And there's no need to bring in politics into a child's life. And I think that's part of the problem that we're dealing with right now, is that really young children are being mobilized towards political ends in a really unnecessary manner. I would really love my children to be able to just have their childlike lives like they're meant to have. And it should be no concern to my 8-year-old or my 10-year-old or my 12-year-old how mom and dad are voting. It no. really shouldn't be.
Yeah, politics should never be like what you lead with. Like, we talk about how politics is downstream of culture, but politics should also be downstream of your values and your critical thinking.
Right.
And when you're raising a child, you should lead with values. You can inculcate your values. You can inculcate an ability to think critically and think for yourself. But saying like, you must support this idea, that's dogmatic. And you don't necessarily, mm-hmm. that's not a great place to start, because you're not teaching them to think for themselves and be a strong individual.
Yeah, and it's just not good for children. Like, I remember growing up and seeing news in the background when I was a kid, like before dinner time or whatever, and everything was just so catastrophic. You're hearing news about people getting robbed, people dying, who's responsible for it, all of these different things. And to think that it doesn't infiltrate your mind in a way as a child, I think is naive. So I would like to shield my kid from that. That's stuff that you deal with as an adult. Of course, they're going to know that these things happen in life. And hopefully at some point they're just self-aware enough to realize that that's just the way the world works. But there's no reason to introduce that to your child as a means to put your values in them. If you lead a life that is a good example of a role model for your child, or just exudes good values in the way that you live and the way right. that your family is shaped, your kid's going to pick that up.
Yeah, I think kids absorb more than they like internalize just by listening, if you're right. telling them what to think, more than like what you're modeling for them and your lifestyle. But I do want to say, I saw someone in the chat say, I teach my kids about the Constitution. And I think that there's a place for, like, you know, hey, you're existence is here, you're mm-hmm. living in this country, here's the way your country came mm-hmm. to be, like, help them make sense of the world that they're living in, the life that they're living. And you have a lot of discretion as a parent with like what you want to teach them about the country that they're living in and the history of it and all that. And I think some of that's healthy. It's healthy to learn about,
of course,
the country, you know. And then if you have a deep love and cherish your country and the ideas that it's founded on, you can pass that on. But I don't know, I think there's definitely like a line where you're like mm-hmm. being dogmatic and saying, shaping their thinking deliberately by, you know, with like very specific political aims, whereas right. opposed to just like, no, hey, here's what mom and dad believe about it, and here's what we know about history, and leaving the rest for them.
And that's the thing, because I'll see parents who engage in this sort of teaching with their children, and you'll see little 5-year-old kids who are like, I love Trump, or I love Biden, and you right. see these 5-year-olds engaging in this and saying these things, and I just go across the board, ugh. That is so wrong. It's not right. Those kids do not know what they're saying. They do not know what they're endorsing. And you know what? I've seen like Daily Wire put out a video where one of their personalities went and spoke to children. And these children were like 5 and 6 years old. And one of them saying like, oh, we don't like Biden in our household or something. And I feel equally as irked by that as I do a kid saying it in the opposite light. It's just not something that you should be getting into with them. And I understand we do that by accident, or we're having conversations sure. with our spouse and our kids awake. And they're hearing it and they go, oh, well, mommy said that she hates Biden, so I hate Biden too. And they feel good engaging in something that adults are also engaging in. But you should never be forcefully putting your kids in a situation to repeat those things.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, there's a degree to which I feel uncomfortable with what you're talking about, but there's another world in which, you know, it's the same as like, you know, I'm an LSU fan, my wife is a Georgia fan, I'm going to be like pushing LSU mm-hmm. fandom on my kids. She's going to be pushing Georgia. And so if they say, oh, Georgia's the best or LSU's the best, I mean, that's like a funny, innocent mm-hmm. sort of like, you know, thing, but
right.
it's not necessarily reflective of this effort to indoctrinate. And I think that there may be an innocent spin on the, you know, oh, right. I'm pro-Trump or whatever for kids to say. But in general, that there's a little bit more of like, okay, let's be careful on that, where we're not like
yeah.
indoctrinate our kids. We're trying to like put them on the internet as political pawns.
Let's
or something
wait
like
a little
yeah.
bit, you know, yeah, until you even know what that means. Yeah, you know what yeah. I mean? Here's our next prompt. This is moderates are the solution. Are you walking forward on that? Moderates are the solution. I can see why you would, why somebody would be like, absolutely, I think moderates are the solution in this case. I think our, we were talking about this earlier, our political system is very much dependent on the people who sit in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the people who bring a little bit of levity to the issues that we can argue on both extreme sides. And for example, the gender issue, there's going to be people who are totally against any sort of gender theory. There's going to be people who are totally for it. And then you have the majority of individuals who sit in the middle, maybe know a lot about it or maybe don't know much, and are looking for specific instances where it applies and specific instances where it doesn't. And I, if we did not have those people who sat in the center, our whole world would be in utter disarray, like crumbled to the ground by now with all the fighting back and forth and even the infighting within our two separate parties. So I don't know that they are the solution, but they are certainly pivotal to the conversations we're having.
Yeah. Early results. I just asked this on a poll. Are moderates a solution? 54% say yes. Mm-hmm. 46% say no. So right down the middle. But we talked about this a little bit earlier of like a healthy society will have, I mean, there's like a naturally a line between on most issues you can identify, okay, most people who are more progressive leaning fall on this side of it. Most people who are conservative leaning fall on the other side. Mm-hmm. And then there's kind of people in the middle who are the people that need to be persuaded in order for power to fall in the hands of the left or the right.
Right.
And in a healthy functioning system, I don't know how much better you can get than that, of like a lot of moderate minded people who are willing to be persuaded either way.
Mm-hmm.
And then both sides have to make their case and you sway the middle. I mean, I think that's just like natural dynamics at work. So that seems like, yes, moderates are the solution in that sense. But with that comes the, is there a right side to be on either one, on all the issues that we talk about, whether it's a gender debate or abortion or taxes or anything like that?
But I don't think there is.
It's not a fixed point.
Yeah.
You know, and as a society, we're always evolving. And then that's what we always have to be debating is, you know, where do we fall right now on given the lay of the land as it is? So, yeah, I think society rises and falls on the opinions of the moderates. But I think, I don't know. I don't think that they're necessarily like leading the solution making per se.
Right.
I think that if you're on the side and you can make a better argument and you could persuade the moderates in a functioning society, that's ideal.
Yeah. What about you, Cam?
I don't think that moderates are the solution, but I, like you guys said, I think they're necessary. Mm-hmm. And I think Taylor made a good case that they serve like, that they have a really important utility where like both sides have to kind of convince them, which causes both sides to lay out their arguments really well. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I just think on any given issue, whenever I hear somebody who says like that is wholly good or wholly evil, I can't trust either of those people for the most part on most things. So to me, that communicates that moderates are that sweet spot of where does this actually work and actually apply and where does it not? And how do we draw that line? And how do we do it legislatively? How do we do it in the way that we vote and who we support? So in that way, yeah, they do function as a solution, but they're just pivotal parts of the structure we're in.
Yeah, and somebody in the chat here said making a good case, and it also just reminded me of something else of like someone said, what's the moderate view of drag queen story time? And that makes me think too of how we talk about like we see people like Barry Weiss and Bill Maher coming out now saying, wow, we made such mistakes during the pandemic and we caused mm-hmm. so much inadvertent harm by allowing these policies to go forth. Whereas a lot of conservatives were during the pandemic at the very beginning, were like, hey, we're doing a lot of crazy stuff right now. This is not okay. And we can prevent a lot of harm if we mm-hmm. swing now and act now and don't institute these crazy lockdown policies and don't make schools go lockdown. And we could have prevented a lot of harm. And so that's a case where the moderates dragging their feet and saying, oh, I'm going to reserve judgment. I'm not going to speak out. I'm not mm-hmm. going to give a big outcry about this because I'm a moderate. And then 2 years later, all the damage is already done and you're trying to pick up the pieces of that. And then you come out and admit that it's wrong. And that's where it's like moderates can't be the solution in that sense, where you're too late to the party to have an impact. And you're like waiting till we've already hit rock bottom. And then you're trying to pick things up.
But that's what happened with moderates. Had moderates actually vocalized a moderate view, that would have been the solution to what was happening in the pandemic. A truly moderate view of the COVID-19 pandemic is wear a mask if you want to wear a mask. Get vaccinated if you want to get vaccinated. Also, here's a set of guidelines that we think is going to put you in the safest position. If you are worried about your vulnerability, follow these guidelines. So if moderates had been vocal, moderation would have been the answer, would have been the solution.
Yeah, and conservatives would have been happy with that, but that's the point point is like the moderates did not win out. Yeah. And so whatever strategy that the moderates and conservatives who were fighting for that used was not effective and was right. not the solution in that case. And what you can say, okay, well, that's because there was so much weaponized institutional power right. on the left non-moderate side that even the moderate perspective and the conservatives weren't able to overcome that. And we mm-hmm. still suffered all the damages despite being vocal. And right. that's where I said, like, in a functioning society, you have a middle that is persuadable and they can help sway things one way or the other. You're in up a creek without a paddle, as they say, if you're in a society in which the moderates and conservatives can agree on something and they still lose. And I think that's like yeah. in Twitter, what we've been seeing too, of like, no, you just have a few elites with institutional power and they're yeah. exerting their influence over everybody, despite everyone agreeing that what they're doing is crazy.
If only our society was a functioning one. Let's keep watching.
This country functions best when people from all different walks of life, all different political ideologies are able to come together for a greater cause. I believe that the two-party system is a trap. I believe that political parties as a concept are antithetical to democracy.
Let's pause there. I just keep pausing. I apologize. I'm kind of base Jack. I'm sort of with what he just said, that political parties are antithetical to democracy in a lot of ways. And I'm sure he'll get to this point, but when George Washington left office, he warned us against partisanship and said that it was not something that we should engage in because it was just going to lead to a great chasm of divide that we wouldn't be able to span across. And I am inclined to agree with that, and it seemingly has happened. But I wonder that if we got rid of political parties today and just memory wiped everybody's brains, will we not lead ourselves there naturally just through human tribalism and just finding our own patterns? And I feel like we would, because that's what we do.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
We'll see. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I also just want to add that I think both parties are a lot more radical than they used to be. And I think moderates are helping bridge that gap in between and kind of showing that, you know, you can agree with both parties, which can help, especially in, you know, Senate and House of Representatives, to come up with better policies and to come up with better laws that help our people instead of, you know, the bickering that we see among our politicians right now.
I just think the problem in America is that we don't have enough political parties. We only have two. That's the problem. It makes us so divided that we have to pick between the left or the right.
Yeah, also, I hate this notion that it's always like what's in the middle that's right. I think really we should be looking at whether it's right or not, not necessarily based upon the fact whether it's right or whether it's left or whether it's in the middle. It should be based upon the arguments. It should be based upon the rationalization.
I love your take on that. Mm-hmm. But nothing can really ever be right, because what's right to one person is not going to be right to the next.
I mean, you can ideologically at both, and I can say, well, this is this and this is this, but who's to say which is correct, which is why the problem of parties, I think, can't really be solved by breaking the binary. It's something that is ingrained into us as humans to be team members, to be competitive. Competition is what we are, even when it comes to representing ourselves, leading ourselves, and attempting to better ourselves. So.
In a sense, yeah. I think competition is pretty much innate in human beings, men in particular, but also women. But we also have this innate structure to feel empathy for each other and sympathize with each other and try to help each other in building communities, which is an argument that a lot of people make for capitalism, is that capitalism allows people to assert their own moral beliefs once they've gained enough capital to do so. So we also have that in ourselves, too. I'm just curious to see if anybody brings it up.
Having more teams isn't going to fix that.
Well, why not just eliminate the political party just to achieve, you know, the ability of people to cooperate with each other? Because George Washington warned of political partisanship his farewell address. He wasn't saying we need more parties. He was saying we need no parties.
Dude, he warned against a lot of stuff. He was like, guys, make sure you don't break yourself up into parties and become this whole bipartisan thing that's gonna F you guys up and it's gonna cause this whole problem. And then we're like, we're going to do exactly that, George Washington. He's also like, make sure you don't get invested in foreign affairs and start worrying about other countries. Worry about yourselves and make sure that this country's good before you go and do other things. And then we're like, absolutely not.
Here's another $200 million for you, Ukraine.
But we respect you, bro.
Because these political parties force people to believe a certain way just so that they can fit in with their fellow party members.
Well, Thanos snapping away the party system isn't going to get rid of ideological teamsmanship. We are always going these issues, and every person, whether they've got a D or an R next to their name, they're going to get, or I say, hey, are you pro or anti-abortion? Okay, get into this. Are you pro or anti-gun? Okay, get into this. You might see some of these groups slightly different, but in the scheme of things, we're still going to have these teams, even if we have it split up into a million different parties like some of these parliaments in other countries do.
But you see, I get what he's saying. I get what the young guy, the young conservative, the black kid is saying, is that we're all going to naturally go that way and people are going to split up in teams based on the issues. But I don't exactly think that's true. I meet a lot of people who, if you break down an issue, a specific issue to them, they will lean in a way that is far different from the party that they subscribe themselves to. But because they subscribe to a certain party, that's the party they vote for. Black people are a great example. Latino people are a great example. You go talk to them about issues. Let's say, what's a good one we can use? With both communities, you could talk about gay rights. I am pro gay rights. I'm pro gay people being able to get married. That's my thing. But if you talk to generally the Black community and the Latino community, they have a specific aversion to those things because they're family-based and faith-based, and those are things that don't typically align with what they believe. But if you talk to them, they go, well, I'm supposed to vote Democrat, and Democrat's my party, so that's the party line that I toe, and I vote D all the way down whenever I go to an election. So it is clear that if you lifted the party lines off of some of these issues, people would start to swing in and out of their lines. So I do agree with the Jack kid on this one.
Yeah, that's an ideal situation where we have a culture in which people are encouraged to think critically about the issues, come to their own conclusions, issue by issue, and not outsource their opinions to a party platform or to a politician or media entity that tells them how to vote or what to think about different issues. I think it's easy to sort of do that in today's day and age, to not have to go through and think critically, but that is something that we should encourage as a culture is, hey, you don't have to outsource your thinking to a party. You should be thinking about each issue on the merits.
Yeah. Let's skip to the next prompt.
Not necessarily we're not going to have any progress.
Neither Trump nor Biden were good presidents.
Ooh, gosh.
Are we allowed to
Neither
talk?
Trump nor Biden are good presidents. Are we allowed to talk about this? I'm going to walk forward. I'm going to say I agree. Where are you at on that?
I mean, I feel very uncomfortable right now. But just because of we're not really allowed to talk about politicians and stuff.
Yeah,
but,
that's all I'm going to say is that I agree. I will say I agree for different reasons, and I'm not going to get into an endorsement or how you should vote on these, and we will move on to the next question after this. But one of them is not good in policy and what they're doing, and the other one is not good in their presentation and actually being somebody respectful. So those are my two thoughts on that. You guys can decipher who I'm talking about, and we are going to move on to the next prompt because we're a nonprofit and we can't talk about those things next.
Almost impossible for most people to emigrate to the United States.
Why we use
media? Oh my gosh. Oh,
saved by the ad.
Saved by the ad.
Someone said, Jack is the guy's name with the glasses?
Jack is the guy's name with the glasses.
Somebody in the chat said he has Chad energy, which I agree with.
He kind of does. Just like a very smart, he's reading up.
It's just Chad.
In his free time.
Owns it.
Okay, next prompt.
Billionaires can solve problems better than the government.
Ooh, billionaires can solve problems better than the government.
What a weird binary to give you. The options for.
It's very interesting.
Either billionaires will control your life or the government. Choose your own adventure.
I'm going to walk forward and say, yes, I agree that billionaires can solve problems better than the government. And the reason I say this is I think the government is surrounded in bureaucracy and red tape and their own agenda. And I think with billionaires, while they have an agenda that is probably profit-based, to have a profit-based agenda, you also have to be thinking about innovation and servicing the people who give you that profit. The government does not have to worry about how you feel when it comes to their spending. They really don't have to worry about how much what they do serves you. Billionaires, because they have a marketplace and because they have a consumer base, do have to worry about what's going to be given back to them and whether or not you are going to continue to be a consumer of their product. So yes, I do think that. I do think in a lot of ways, capitalism gives ways to people's philanthropic natures, that once they have enough money to provide for them and theirs, they want to take the excess money and put it into things that they are passionate about, whether or not that is philanthropy and in charities and working on world problems, or it's just solving issues that they've been perplexed by since they were a child. I think billionaires are just more likely to do those things and have a deeper incentive to do things that are better for humans.
Yeah, this is such a tough one because it's very like this or that without much room for nuance. It's like which billionaires? Right. It's a system in which any billionaire, like sure. You could have one malicious billionaire who, for example, wants to pay for a bunch of district attorneys to be instituted around cities around the country that is extremely soft on crime, and then they turn our cities into criminal hellholes, and that is a very negative outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I almost want to flip the question and say billionaires can create problems better than the government. And that I would say the government can create problems probably more easily than billionaires. And so I guess, but I don't know, maybe it is true that billionaires can solve it. I mean, again, I keep bringing up Elon Musk, but he's solving a problem with free speech being censored in our current time and doing that. But that's coming from his values. You're at the mercy of what the values of the billionaire in question are, whereas at the government, you're at the mercy of whether there's corruption, whether it's truly representing the will of the people, and whether the people are doing something that's actually good.
It's the same. You know, where you have an Elon Musk who we assume is doing good things. We don't know that for sure. And he has plenty of weird stuff that he engages in his personal life. But you also have the Bill Gates billionaires of the world. So then it's like, okay, but the statement is billionaires can solve problems better than the government. Not that they are, not that they're currently doing so, but are they capable of solving problems better than the government? In today's view of billionaires versus government, I'll pick the billionaires. That's
you have
not
to go
that
down
I,
with one.
Right. If I have to pick one, I'm going to pick the billionaires. But the government does have the capability to solve problems better than billionaires just because they have means of getting connected with infrastructure and working with all these different corporations that are run by the billionaires. The issue is the government is more concerned with corruption and their own agenda than they are with people.
Which you're accepting that as like, that's just the reality that we're dealing with.
Yeah, right now. Yeah. That is the reality.
Which is hard not to acknowledge.
Right.
And when I think about government's efforts to solve problems, you usually end up with more layers of bureaucracy that are rife with corruption, that make things more expensive, that make things less practical, and there's no less and less accountability, less and less transparency, and it's impossible to like undo that once it's done.
Whereas, there's so many layers.
Yeah.
And then it's like the billionaires are funding the government. They're the one who are creating the money for these people's campaigns and becoming like the kingmakers in today's day and age. So which
Cam's
one's
got
worse?
A statement.
Go Cam.
Well, I mean, the government's also funding the billionaires if you look at like all of the money
that's
the government's
true.
Making.
Oh gosh.
The subsidies. But the thing is too is like I don't know what the answer is, but there's an important distinction between these two groups, and it's that the billionaire has to earn your money through marketing and making products that you want to buy. The government just takes your money and you go to jail if you don't give it.
That's true.
Okay, in theory. But we're now seeing a lot of these woke corporations jamming down stuff that consumers are not asking for because they're like, we don't care anymore. We're worried about our ESG score and virtue signaling rather than being responsive to the market. And there's lots of billionaires who have inherited wealth or wealth because of their corrupt government influence, that they're just like big food, big ag, all this stuff, big pharma. That's all. They're just like have it gated in where like they're not really worried about the market. They're worried about keeping their stranglehold over the government. And so there's not a clear line.
It's an interesting relationship too, because like when those companies get to those places where they're like almost invincible, it's also they got there because the government dumped millions of dollars in subsidies. So it gets really weird.
It's very synergistic.
Drain the swamp.
They
have. The audience, for what it's worth, says who can solve problems better? Billionaires 90%, government 10%.
Wow. Okay, so you guys clearly have picked your fighter in this.
We need Batman. We need a benevolent billionaire who will save us from the corruption.
Let's hear from the Gen Zers. All the conservatives walked forward.
Your
my screen.
Classic. We've got new cables, guys, but the new cable even goes out, so it's a deeper issue, just like there's a deeper issue with the government conspiracies.
There's always a deeper issue. Okay. all the conservatives walked forward.
Capitalism will always be more superior than the public sector in almost like 90% of things in this country. Mm. Billionaires have, obviously they have a lot of money, but what I see is that billionaires are using their money for philanthropy. They don't want to pay taxes, I see that, because they just feel like if the government takes their money, they're not going to do good with the money. A great example would be Amazon. I mean, it has revolutionized the way we shop.
I think the key word in the prompt is billionaires can affect positive change better
Jack.
Than the government.
What is up with Jack?
I don't
think he's based.
It's a, like, guarantee that they will. Because I think there are certain instances of billionaires doing good with their money. But then there are also, you know, I know you mentioned Jeff Bezos, but he also often doesn't use his money for good, because there are many reports of Amazon employees being mistreated, denied breaks, and, you know, issues where it's like, come on, you have all that money. Do you need, like, so much more from, like, cutting corners like that?
Right. These billionaires, there was literally stories of, like, Amazon employees peeing in buckets while they were packaging orders and getting them ready, because they just, like, wouldn't let them have pee breaks, apparently, allegedly. I don't know if this is true. Don't sue me, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a very valid point.
Do fantastic things, but I also understand that government regulations, taxes, and various other things occupy their time. I don't believe billionaires should be heavily taxed. I believe the tax cuts we had in 2018 were some of the best things we saw for our economy.
Dude, I thought my video was in double speed, but it's just how fast he's talking.
I know.
It's a little
he's
Ben
like
Shapiro.
A Ben Shapiro. Yeah. I just noticed his t-shirt too. Yeah. He's like got the gas prices on there.
Yeah.
Completely would agree with you that we shouldn't be taxing billionaires at such a high rate. If you tax billionaires, they would respond by increasing the prices of goods and services. I think the reason why everything is so expensive is inflation. But in the past, when inflation was low, there were times where things were very expensive. And that is because of the fact that we have high corporate tax rates in some states.
Well, so I respectfully disagree with the idea that taxing billionaires, or specifically leaving billionaires untaxed, is beneficial to the American economy, because most like prosperous era for the American economy was the 1950s, the post-war economic miracle. That was when billionaires were being taxed at a rate of 90%. And this isn't socialism or anything. This was a
Cam is shaking his head. Are you okay, Cam?
Yeah. So I guess like Jack just forgot about the difference between marginal and effective tax rates. So like the billionaires were paying like a marginal tax rate of 90% or whatever, but they were only being taxed effectively 10% more, like 10.8% more than they are currently. And even if it was the case that like they were being taxed an effective rate of 90%, that's not why the post-war economy was so good. The post-war economy was good because the men came home from war that we were dumping money into and started working and getting money into the economy.
I'll be honest, you know more about the subject than I do. I'm not well-versed in 1950s economics. Is this a subject that you're well-versed in, Taylor?
Not particularly, but yeah, the tax billionaires argument is simplistic, to say the least, mm-hmm. and it's typically not made by people who have a nuanced understanding of economics. And you know, the it's like California. We're seeing rich people who are taxed just take their businesses to other states that aren't taxed up the wazoo, right. Or they pass that cost on the consumers, which is why everything's so freaking expensive. Mm-hmm. In California. So it's a very simplistic, knee-jerk sort of intuition about, oh, well, they have more money. They, you know, they don't need it. Let's take it. It's like, or we could look at how they created value that proliferated and built wealth in the economy,
right.
And try to incentivize more of that. But I agree that to the degree that, you know, like we talked about before with corruption, and you get into this vicious cycle with lobbying and billionaires sending people to lobby to give them corrupt deals with the government, yeah. And contracts and all that, then they can edge out and engage in monopolistic practices. All that, yeah, we should crack down on. We should close all those loopholes. We should make it difficult for billionaires to reduce competition and engage in corruption with the government. We should have as much transparency as possible there. But to just say, you made a lot of money, let me take it, that's right. Not going to be the best solution.
It's like as I said before, I'm not well versed in the subject of taxes or the economy. But when it comes to this, I mean, my general view is that it's wholly dependent on how you view the government as an entity and how well you think they are doing their job. And if you don't think the government is doing their job, you're not going to want to be taxed, whether or not you are a billionaire or a normal person making the median income here in this country. You're going to look at every percentage of taxes that you're paying off your income and go, how dare they take this money from me? And as the government runs more poorly, the more we start to resent not only billionaires being taxed, but ourselves being taxed. And if the government picked up their pace a little bit and actually did something good with the taxes that they were taking from us, public schooling is a great example. If public school didn't look like shit like it does now, and it didn't look like our money was being put to use, or if it is being put to use, it's being put to use with gender theory and critical race theory and all these woke ideologues being ushered in to teach our children, if that was being run better, people would have far less of an aversion to giving you their money. And that seems to be the through line across the board, that people on the left seem to think that the government is more capable of using their tax dollars than a billionaire entity or any entity outside of the government or even self-governance on behalf of the people. And the right seems to look at the government and say they are totally inefficient when it comes to taking my money.
Yeah, and I think there's truth on both sides that, you know, people with power get corrupted. I think they say absolute power corrupts absolutely. So whether that's government bureaucrats or committees or whatever it may be, they're susceptible to corruption, just like greedy capitalists, business owners are subject to corruption, and they're going to act in their own self-interest. The question is, how do we create ways to hold those intuitions in check, whether it's in the government or whether it's in the private sector? And that is what we should focus on, is creating as much transparency, as much accountability as possible. And as the public and having a good media and journalists and people that are out there looking at these relationships and looking for evidence of that corruption and rooting it out. And that, to me, is as good as you can do. The best you can do is not believe that, oh, billionaires are never going to do anything in their own interest, and we should just have give them all the leeway in the world, or government's going to take care of us and we should just give them all the power. It's like, no, they should be accountable to us, and they should be accountable to, and that's what we should use our power to create, is incentive structures where they have to be transparent and be accountable. And we have to do our duty of being engaged and paying attention.
Right. The issue is that's what they think they're doing with ESGs. They think they truly are making these corporations and billionaires accountable to us. It's just their definition of us seems to change a lot. And that's the issue. It's always the definition of words and what it means and who's being accountable to who.
You will be accountable to us and be happy.
Yes, you will be very happy.
The World Economic Forum will do the accountability part. For you.
We love the Klaus Schwab accent. I don't think that's anything like what he sounds like, but it's close enough for government work.
American capitalism under a Republican president, Dwight Eisenhower.
And this was right after a fantastic, I hate to say fantastic war, but it was a fantastic war for us in which we got so much American pride, and that Republican president, Dwight D. Eisenhower, then utilized that money that he taxed from those billionaires to create a great system, which is the interstate system, which is a fantastic thing that connects our country. But unfortunately, the government isn't really investing money in things like that anymore. It's investing money in weird programs and things that the average American isn't going to benefit from.
All right.
So billionaires do have a lot of money and a lot of influence in order to do good within our economy, but nowhere near the ability of the government. If we're talking about billions of dollars, the government has access to trillions of dollars on a federal scale, like yearly speaking. Yeah, in some circumstances like Mark Cuban, they absolutely can do those things. It doesn't anywhere near compare to the...
I'm hearing what he's saying, right? He's saying the government has access to trillions of dollars as opposed to billionaires who have access to billions of dollars. But my initial question is, where the hell is the money that the government's getting coming from? Because the billionaires earn their money from the people who gave it to them for the product that they conceived and brought about and produced and manufactured to give to us to consume. Where's the government getting money? They're literally just fucking printing it. So yeah, they have trillions of dollars. When you have a magic wand and you can just print trillions of dollars, you're going to have trillions of dollars.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to me because in high school, I had to take an environmental science course, and they taught us about something called the tragedy of the commons, which is this idea that the people mistreat the environment and don't use things efficiently because they have this sense that, oh, we have all the trees in the world. We have all the gas in the world. So what's the difference if I pollute it, or if I exploit it, or if I use our common resources disproportionately or am wasteful? I don't personally pay the penalty. So let me be wasteful. Who cares? We have an infinite amount. And it's funny that the left, for as much as they're concerned about the environment and the efficient management of resources ostensibly, when it comes to the green agenda, when it comes to money and taxes and all that. It's like, oh, we just have this. The economy is the American economy is just this ATM machine, and we can just go back to it over and over again and print more money and make as much as we want and take more money from billionaires because there's an infinite amount. And it's we never stop to ask like where this came from or how this wealth was created or how we got to this position. It's just, oh, we're just everything's great. So let's just keep taking money out of this. Right. Let's just keep redistributing it. Let's just keep reprinting it and then punishing the people who are creating the wealth. And how long do you think you can do that before the whole thing collapses? And we're dangerously close right now.
We're already screwed. We're already screwed in that respect. So I don't know where he thinks this trillions of dollars is coming from.
The level of access of healthcare that they do have in these other countries. And it doesn't compare to the damage that will happen to the average American when the government decides to pull trillions of dollars out of nowhere. Because we have to remind ourselves the government makes nothing. The government takes from every single citizen standing in this room that pays taxes each and every day, including state governments and federal governments. They start throwing trillions at random things like, I don't know, healthcare for everybody, which can work for a country that's the size of maybe South Carolina, but will not work for the size of our country.
Okay,
yeah, it's because our government actually like mismanages the money comparative to other nations. We spend a lot in terms of our per capita on healthcare, like more than other countries, yet they actually have better health outcomes and they cover more
people. Okay, that's a fair point.
Yeah, sure. But it's interesting that like when people make this argument about who should handle the money, they say, well, the government has more of a connection to all these different industries and infrastructure and healthcare system to cover this. Who's to say that you can't have those connections as the people? Like, who gave the government the power to have control over those entities? They did. And it's not something that's just always been the case. It's something that it's a position of power that they strategically place themselves into. I'm of the opinion that the federal government does a very few things well, and all of that outside of it should be handled by our states and should be handled by the people living within them, choosing the representatives for themselves. And for some reason, we've allowed the federal government to expand and expand and expand and expand. And you'll see like every single year, it seems, they're creating a new set of committees for a new set of issues, and those committees never die. Like, they never go anywhere, and they get all of this federal funding, and they're never abolished. They just continue.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. What was it? There's nothing so permanent as a temporary government entity or something like that.
Right. Whoever said that, genius.
I think there are lots of things that the United States could do better comparative to other countries. We can learn a lot more from those other countries. And yet we don't do that because of this idea of American exceptionalism.
The first part.
I mean, maybe even a little bit of the second part. You will meet a lot of, and don't get me wrong here because I love y'all, but a lot of conservative people who do not want to hear the happenings of other countries purely for the sake of they are America first and they don't care about what's happening in other countries. Even if it's like, but they're doing this a little bit better and the people might be a little bit happier. You don't want to know about that? And they're like, no.
Yeah, and two things can be true at once. America can be exceptional in a lot of ways, and other smaller countries may be able to manage their healthcare systems more efficiently.
Right, but they're also a lot smaller than us and a lot more ethnically homogenous in most of the examples that they give. Right, right, right.
So
there's so many other factors that are not taken into account. And then they're like, look at Denmark. Their healthcare is so much better than our healthcare. And it's like, okay, wait, you're looking at a totally different demographic of people, totally different governing, totally different ethnic makeup. Everything is different about that country.
Yeah. So it goes both ways. You can be on the conservative side and you could say, no, America does no wrong. And every country's health system is inferior to ours. It's like, okay, well, that's just objectively not true. But you can be on the left and be like, oh, one country has a better system than us. Therefore, America's not exceptional. It's like, okay, that's not true either.
Right. And it's just like, you can look at any country, right? Just on a basic exercise of just looking how big America is compared to any other country. Like, they use these very small countries as an example where, like, you driving from one end of Florida, from the bottom end of Florida to the top end of Florida, is you driving through that entire country. And they're like, look at their healthcare system. It's so great. With, like, no view for how many people are living here, how many different people are living here, how many different medical needs are met here in this country. It's just a totally different landscape.
Yeah. Which is also not an excuse for corruption in the American system.
Yes.
And we at PragerU have a video about price transparency in healthcare. And so there are lots of reforms and things that need to be done. And there's areas of where the swamp has made things unnecessarily expensive and just absurd, you know, that it costs, you know, $10,000 for an MRI at one hospital and $2,000 for another and for the same thing. And that a lot of these things could be ameliorated and costs could come down. you know, but again, to draw these conclusions from sweeping generalizations is just not a good faith idea, not a good example of critical thinking.
Yeah. We're going to move on to another prompt here.
Do we need to reconnect? Man. Yep.
My goodness. We are just on a tear today. I think it's...
Who's running this place anyway?
Who is running this place? Who's responsible for Unapologetic with Amala?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait a second.
We're going to get reconnected in here. The next statement is, the Supreme Court is out of touch. Walk forward if you agree. The Supreme Court is out of touch. I think I'm going to walk forward. Am I becoming a liberal?
you've been a PSYOP all along.
I have a feeling like we're going to get an ad. We are going to get an ad. Okay, in like 5 seconds. I'm going to walk forward and say, yes, the Supreme Court is out of touch. And I have a feeling a lot of these other young people are too. And the reason I'm going to walk forward, it is literally wholly dependent on which party's in power. Like, how many of this party do we have? How many of the other party do we have? We're going to send things through, and the party who represents the majority is going to win the case. So that becomes a problem for me. I don't believe that's what the Supreme Court was meant to be. It was literally meant to be a system of course, checks and balances of the three branches, where the executive branch holds people who, of course, represent a certain party, and the legislative branch represents a bunch of people from different parties, although we did warn against bipartisanship. And the Supreme Court is the judicial branch, is supposed to be like, let me keep you guys in check. Make sure you're not, you know, doing things and walking over the other person. And we want to make sure there's room for the minority, but also that the majority is being represented as well. And we want to make sure the kids are not fighting and they're not breaking each other's arms. And now it's like, you're just another branch.
A proxy for the political views of whoever nominated.
Exactly.
You. Yeah. But the question is, like, I agree with you, in an ideal world, the Supreme Court is committed to the rule of law, being faithful to the Constitution, and interpreting that and determining whether legislation contradicts the Constitution or not. That is the ideal world, and like, partisan politics should not be part of it. Is that possible? Maybe. I mean, was it possible once upon a time? Was there ever a Supreme Court that was not justice, that who was not partisan in his thinking, his or her thinking? I don't know. So the question for me is, like, is the best you can do having the nomination process that we have, and allowing for, okay, you know, one party is going to nominate people they agree with and the other one's not, but at least we have the cycles with time that on balance over time kind of lends itself to parity, in the same way the terms of presidential elections. I would support like shorter terms and stuff like that to make it maybe cycle through faster, mm-hmm. and where you don't get
something to think about,
permanent majority. But I don't know that you can do much better than what we have now, given the state of society.
Yeah.
Because, go ahead.
No. I mean, I think Roe v. Wade was a good example of, like, clearly the Supreme Court is out of touch, and clearly there's something wrong here. Not because conservative justices were able to push forth this opinion, but because you had a bunch of left-leaning justices who, even though there is nothing written in the Constitution to support this, wrote dissident opinions to this. And you had liberal professors at universities like Yale saying, I'm a liberal, and it is my personal opinion that women should have this right, but the Constitution does not say that.
Yeah.
So here's my opinion on the matter. Here's where, and that is what the Supreme Court is supposed to function as. We have infighting in the parties here, or they're fighting with each other over a certain rule of law. It comes to us. We check to make sure whether or not this has been written before or alluded to before, and then we get back to you on that. And clearly, there is political activism happening in the Supreme Court, and I don't mean just in the liberal sense. I mean on both sides of the coin. You have justices who are conservative, representing conservative values rather than constitutional values, and you have the same on the liberal end.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, it's a question of, like, are they out of touch with what? Like, are they out of touch with their original purpose? Because a lot of people, I think, if you're of the view that the Supreme Court should just hand down decisions that are consistent with your preferred position on the issues of the day, you could say they're out of touch with my view on abortion. Therefore, yes, the Supreme Court is out of touch. But that's the way that they ruled recently would be evidence that they're in touch with the Constitution and with its purpose, by as far as objective readers of the Constitution would say.
Yeah.
By the way, the audience says 54% of you say yes, the Supreme Court is out of touch. 46% say no.
So you guys are split. Like, I just listened to Ketanji Brown Jackson talk about affirmative action.
That's
and Her entire speech on affirmative action was her opinion on affirmative action. It had nothing to do with equal protection under the law. It had nothing to do with the Civil Rights Act. None of it was placed in her opinion in the stories that she told while being a supporter of affirmative action. That is not your job. If you want to support affirmative action because of your beliefs on race and because of what you think colleges should be looking at, go to the House or go to the Senate and work there. Do not become a Supreme Court justice. And they certainly should not appoint people who are more beholden to their own ideology than they are to what is written.
Yeah, she's it's also like out ridiculous. Of touch with the dictionary of what a woman is, so there's that.
That's so crazy. You're advocating for race and sex on college applications, and you don't even know what that means. Let's hear what the Gen Z people have to say.
The Supreme Court is full of older people, which is why I just feel like if we were to bring some newer, fresher justices in there, they would understand what we're seeing more. Because as an older person, yeah, you can do your research, but you won't experience things the way that we're experiencing them at this moment.
I semi-agree with her. I think it depends. Like, I'm looking for youth more so in the House and Senate than I'm looking for youth in the Supreme Court, because their jobs are different. The House and Senate, your job is almost wholly based upon living in the current moment and having a pulse for your own constituents. So it's important to have a youthful exuberance in those jobs, which is why we're going to get into some young people who are running and talk about that, not as an endorsement, but just our thoughts on young people running. And I would say I'm supportive of that, assuming it's the right young person. With the Supreme Court, you're trying to take wisdom for wisdom's word, and not the wisdom of the Supreme Court justices, but of the founding fathers that came far before them and who wrote these very important documents. So is youth necessarily important when it comes to that? No, because their personal opinions are not important.
Yeah, and there's also the issue of having a vested interest in the future. And you're when you're at a certain stage in life, you're not going to be here for the consequences of the very decisions that you're handing down. And that's true on the judicial bench as well as in the legislative branch. So
yeah, which we're seeing now. I think like most politicians are above the age of 50, if not 60. That's ridiculous.
Both sides too.
That's,
you look in Congress, it's yeah, like, I mean, people talk about term limits. Would you support like a term limit on for the Supreme Court as well as the legislative branch?
My initial opinion is yes. But I've not thought about it enough to think about what the logistics of that means, how whether or not it opens up the Supreme Court for weaknesses and just like party pendulum swinging back and forth. But on principle of like, should somebody be able to sit in a lifetime appointment seat? On that principle alone, I think no. Like, we watched Ruth Bader Ginsburg sit in her Supreme Court seat until she was literally dead. And far before that, she was probably incapable of serving her position, which we know because she was in and out of the hospital and all those things. And this happened to previous justices as well. And I don't think that's okay. Much like with the presidential race. And when I say that for Trump, I say that for Biden. Too old. You're too old. And it should not be okay. It should not be accepted, but it is being accepted.
Yeah. And you have like senators and Congress people who are in their seats like year after year, election after election, until they're well beyond their peak in function.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem healthy. And you could talk about, unintended consequence of everything, but I mean, it seems to work fine for on the presidential side, the precedent of, no more than two terms. So I don't necessarily oppose it. I do think that you could probably follow more closely to the tradition and the standard that we have now of like, okay, it's longer for judicial, so it's not this constant flux. But something definitely needs to be done. I think most Americans agree. And the idea that we haven't seen that change yet is just testament to where we've got some work to do on the swamp side of things.
Mm-hmm. Anything to say, Cam?
I don't know. I'm interested. I wonder if the average age of the Supreme Court is lower than the average age of Congress.
I feel like it is.
You think so?
I feel like it is now with Ketanji and Amy Coney Barrett. Yeah. I feel like that brought it down quite a bit. Yeah. I forget
Kavanaugh,
what the average age.
But that's the point. I mean, I guess because they're lifelong appointments, there's incentive to nominate younger justices when you have that opportunity.
Right.
Which, should the age be such a factor across the board?
No, I don't think it should. I think that's messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with a more reasonable term limit, you will be disincentivized to nominate young people and keep them until they're octogenarians.
Right. All right, we might have to do a part two on this video because we're already past 4 o'clock, guys. We're going into the week. I'm so sorry.
We're
there's
like springboarding off
about
the prompts and just talking about it ourselves instead of listening to them. So
I'm so sorry to the Gen Z people in this show. If you caught this and you were on Jubilee, I'm so sorry. We did not really listen to you all that much today. We listened to some of it, I promise. Let's get into Super Chats so that we can respond to some of you guys who have been talking throughout the show. TRM919, thank you so much. You sent a sticker, said you are amazing. We appreciate your Super Chat and appreciate you listening. Thank you. Falcon Blizz Zach. What is...
Whoa, there goes the laptop.
There goes the laptop.
Who needed it? Oh, my God. What are you? Which flag is that?
My laptop screen broke.
Oh, great.
Guys,
maybe it just died.
No, I think it broke. Live on air.
This is doing a live show. You never know what you're going to see, guys. Hope you're enjoying the candor.
But thank you so much for your super chat. It's going to go towards a new
Was
laptop.
It a flag?
Yeah.
Of a country? Isn't that Nigeria?
Might be.
Sorry, green guys. And white?
I think it's Nigerian.
You should know this, by the way.
I really should
heritage.
Know it. I am Nigerian.
Oh, Lord.
Sorry, guys. Jason, thank you so much for your super chats. No message, but we appreciate it.
You guys are going to be able to say, I was there watching. Early on, when we did one of your early streams,
not this story.
We had a floating shelf behind Amala that stopped floating because it was attached to the wall with tape, and it fell down while we were on air. And to this day, we get people who are like, I was watching that day, and they won't let us forget it. So you guys were here the day that Amala broke her laptop.
You guys are commenting back to the desk, and I know. These lap desks are the worst thing we've ever purchased. And
I like them. It looks it looks bad whenever it's just like this.
You know what?
It's like unintentional.
I'm over it. We're done with the lap desks.
Jail.
They've ruined our lives. Monicaela says, what is your thought on Carolyn Leavitt? She is 25 years old, Gen Z Republican candidate in New Hampshire, first congressional district. If she gets elected, she will be the youngest woman ever elected. I cannot endorse candidates, I will say, on behalf of her age. I think 25 is cool. I'm not upset with that, as long as you are a knowledgeable individual. But I cannot give her an endorsement or say my personal thoughts about her. Savrix, thank you so much for your super chat. They have pre-programmed perceptions installed in. Are you talking about who in particular are you talking about? I imagine left-leaning people is what you're talking about. They have pre-programmed perceptions installed in.
We all have that.
Maybe. Do we all have pre-programmed things installed? I think we have things that we're exposed to. I think it's more nurture than nature.
Yeah. I mean,
But I think maybe we do have our own pre-programmed proclivities. Like our personalities tend to have things that you see even when we're babies and stuff. But I think a lot of it is just what we're exposed to. So I don't like to view people who I disagree with as being brainwashed or indoctrinated, even though in some ways they can be, because it's all about what you're exposed to. And if you're exposed to that, that's what you're going to believe. It's really about it.
Yeah. I mean, in large part, though, what we fight against is sort of a dogmatic attitude.
Right.
And when you're fighting against dogma that is being pushed down from the culture, from mainstream ideas that are indoctrinating quote unquote people. That I think it's fair game to call it. So.
People are donating to the laptop fund.
I saw that.
Now,
that was great. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Durden, thank you. I don't know if that's a Tyler Durden reference from Fight Club, but if it is, very cool. Thank you for the laptop fund. We appreciate it. Brandon Reynolds, thank you for your super chat also towards the laptop. You didn't put that in your message, but I'm just going to state that it's going towards the laptop.
Proceeds will go to the laptop fund for the rest of the show.
So that we still have a show. Beatrix, and thank you for your super chat. Brazilian here. Instead of talking the Amazon, America and Europe should take care of their own lands and forests. Stop craving our minerals and pretending you care about the environment. You know what I heard? That a lot of these environmentalists who are like pushing electric cars and all of this stuff are like headed straight to the Amazon to mine all of their zinc and lithium. And they're like, this is going to help with deforestation and all this shit. And they're literally just stealing land in the Amazon.
Yeah, I'm sure more environmental destruction is being done in the name of environmentalism than we would care to admit.
Yeah. This next one's from Joe Finch. Thank you for your super chat. It says, can we club together to get Amala a YouTube premium subscription to avoid the ads?
Ah.
there's more to the message, but I can't see the rest of it. But I appreciate your super chat, and we kind of need it because I keep getting interrupted by ads with you guys.
That's true. I forgot we could do that.
Maybe we should get a YouTube premium prescription. Mm-hmm. We should do that for you guys.
We need to do better on the ad blocker, too. On your, people are always saying there's
too many ads. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Capitalism, guys.
We're all consumers at the end of the day. Yeah. We're not humans, we're consumers. Sup, my dude, says, good show as per usual, Amala, but I'm triggered by your use of white headphones. Promote headphones of color. It is your due diligence. Hashtag diversity.
Uncle Rucka strikes again.
First of all, I'm half black and half white. So who gets to pick what color my headphones are? Me.
Well, yeah, but now you're like denying your black side.
I'll paint this side black. I'll paint one side black.
Everything you do has to be right down the middle. Yeah. Jimmy Buffett and rap on this playlist every other song.
Ion says laptop fun. Thank you so much.
We love it.
And guys, those are our super chats.
That was actually staged. We just wanted to get some sympathy donations.
I feel like it's actually...
it doesn't look too good.
It's not looking good. I'm seeing a big old crack. This is supposed to be on.
Oh, gosh.
Right there in the center of the laptop, guys. So my boss is going to be very happy with me. We'll talk to him after the show. Thank you guys so much for watching. If you have any super chat money, please send a super chat. Just kidding. We'll be fine. Guys, thank you so much for watching. It's been quite the roller coaster. Let me know down below, who do you agree with the most on this panel of guests? Is it the liberal Gen Z individuals? Is it the moderate Gen Z individuals? Or is it the conservative Gen Z individuals? Who made a better case for their beliefs? Let me know in the description down below who'd you like the most on the show, and we will read through your comments. Love reading what you have to say. If you guys would like to join the Discord is in the link in the description down below. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we go live. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and we will see you guys tomorrow. Bye.